Welcome to episode 16 of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. This is part two of my conversation with Annapolis oil painter, John Ebersberger. In our last episode, John described his troubled development as an artist and how one portrait painter changed everything for him. That painter was Cedric Egli. In this episode, John introduces us to a second painter who had as dramatic an impact upon his artistic development as Cedric. His name is Henry Henschy. John gives us a fascinating window into an aspect of American art history you may know very little about.
But anyway, back to my gestation of what I do artistically is, Cedric had portrait painting classes, and his wife, a very gifted artist named Jeanette Egli, said, I remember she was critiquing my painting, and I said, well, I really don't know that much about color, you know. I was secretly fishing for a compliment, as I thought I had done rather well. I said, well, I don't really know that much about color. And she said, yeah, I can tell. She said, I was like, oh, well, aren't we frank, you know. So she said, you need to go study with Henry Henschy, you know. So, and there were a number of other artists in the class that later went on to teach at Maryland Hall. Me, Josephine Beebe, Lee Boynton, Bonnie Roth, and we all that summer went up to Provincetown, Massachusetts to study with Henry Henschy. It was 1982. So that I had already studied a couple of years with Cedric, you know, two or three years, working on portraiture, the figure, you know, studying anatomy, classical, you know, really pretty in-depth analysis.
He gave you the training you should have had at Maryland.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And now you're ready for Henry.
No, I was really lucky to have had such an extraordinary exemplar of the classical tradition, you know. And I think without that underpinning, it might not have been a successful a venture. Because Henschy came from Hawthorne's. Henschy was Charles Hawthorne's teaching assistant in the 1920s. This is how this all happened. The timing was just, it's uncanny. It was just right because I was 26 and Henry Henschy was 82 when the first summer I went up there. So if I had been a little older, you know what I mean? If he had been older, it might not, I was really very
you were just on the cusp end.
Oh, just, man, I was just like, it was just like, you know, two meteors or whatever, you know, in the sky or two, you know, it's just like, just by happenstance that it all came together. And I remember Cedric told me, he said, now when you go up there, don't get hypnotized. Don't get hypnotized by the color. You know, because he, you know, he, you know.
Because he'd already been up learning from Henry.
He had been
right?
up there, yeah, but he had already had a successful career. So it was really kind of a unique situation for him as a pretty accomplished portrait painter to be, but Cedric to this day, you know, this unquenchable thirst for knowledge, always developing, always striving, you know, learning. And I think most artists, you know, that are pretty good, you know, they maintain that curious spirit. They're always wanting to perfect and get better. And so for him, it was a matter of, you know, how can I take the color and incorporate it with what I already know and my tonal, you know, kind of approach to painting. With me, I hadn't quite been fully baked yet anyway, so I think it was easier. But I did get hypnotized by the color, and I was, you know, it's like the scales fell from my eyes. You know, my eyes have seen the glory, you know. It was just like, whoa, you know, because Henschy was an extraordinary master impressionist painter, you know, and who's still not as well known or appreciated maybe as he will be at some future time. But he would do these demonstration paintings every Friday morning. Now, when I started studying with him, he had just begun to develop cataracts. So it did, he eventually passed away from Parkinson's disease. And I believe his sense of balance, and it might have started to affect his drawing. But his color was still glorious, and there were moments where he would do these demonstration paintings, and there was one such painting he did one year, I remember, and it made me realize what a magnificent painter he was, you know, and it made me kind of, it renewed my interest in seriousness. Hmm. And I was drawing caricatures at the time up at Harbor Place in downtown Baltimore. And I remember going back to Earth Sinister and saying, you know what, I'm going back up. You know, I had done my 2 weeks or whatever, the length of time I was staying up there. And I came back, I was drawing caricatures. I said, I've got to get back up there. This guy's, you know, he's getting up, you know, he was in his mid-80s. And I was in my 20s just learning. I said, I got to go study with this guy, you know. And so I did. And it really influenced my work. And it got me more interested in painting outdoor still life, which is a pretty new, unique genre of painting, if you think about it. I think Henschy really, that's kind of a, if you think about it, how many, you can't go to the National Gallery of Art and find too many outdoor still life paintings, you know, but it was kind of a genre that he did quite well. But anyway, so it got me more interested in doing the still life, outdoors, indoors, figure paintings, not necessarily, so Cedric's instruction was, you know, it was pretty formal, professional portraiture, but I found more joy in doing the landscape and you know, just cross genre painting. I didn't want to be like just tied down doing staid kind of painting. You know, I kind of had maybe it comes from drawing cartoons or something. I wanted to be more expressive, you know, and Henschy's paintings were alive with light and color and there was an excitement to it. So, you know, if you're young in your 20s, you know, you want to devote your life to something. You want it to be something that's exciting to you, you know? And so when I saw him do these paintings, it was like, wow, okay, this really is exciting. So for a while, now at the time, Cedric and Henschy had somewhat of a professional rivalry, but it was in terms of their students. Like Henschy would, you know, be thumping his chest like, arr! Henschy would get up there and go, excuse me, go, there isn't a portrait painter in the country I would allow to do my portrait. He said, because there's not a one of them that gets an accurate flesh note. He said, most portrait painters, and they do, most professional portrait painters paint kind of a formulaic color, color, a flesh color. You know, how do you paint flesh, you know? You know, if you think about a box of crayons, you know, there was like one magic peach color and it said flesh on it, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think you're going to find that now in a box of crayons, you know. But it's like, how do you paint flesh? So, you know, and if you look at the artists of the past, you know, the master would have a particular approach that he would teach his apprentice. You know, this is how you mix this color and this is how you mix that color. So Henschy's approach was you mix the color that you see affected by the light conditions that you see. Obviously, you're going to get a different color if the subject is outdoors on a sunny day than if the subject is outdoors on a cloudy day. Indoors on a sunny day, indoors on a cloudy day. So he would get up there and kind of, thump his chest, figuratively speaking, and go, you know, there isn't a portrait painter in the country that I would allow to paint my portrait. Not a one of them gets an accurate flesh note, you know. And I remember, he says, can anyone here tell me a portrait painter that would do such, you know, and I raise my hand. Well, I think Cedric's very accomplished and would do such a, you know, I've stood up for my guy Cedric, you know. and I remember him snorting, you know, flaring his nostrils, Henschy, you know, going, well, that's good, you're loyal. but then on the other side of the coin, I remember coming back to Annapolis, you know, painting in the rest of the year, you know, and you know, Cedric, you know, really railing at me, you know, about you know, not putting enough energy in mastering the portrait and getting too carried away with the color hyperbole, and you know, I was like pushed and pulled, you know, and I remember it was like a guy talking to his father. I remember specifically saying to him, maybe I don't want to be a portrait painter. No, he said, he pulled me aside. He said, you know, you can't take forever to learn how to be a portrait painter. And I said, well, maybe I don't want to be a portrait painter. Felt like a kid telling his dad, you know, maybe I don't want to be a cobbler. You know, or it's like the kid in we just watched the beautiful animated cartoon Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, with the where the little elf goes, I want to be a dentist. you know what I mean? I don't want to be an elf. I want to be a dentist. I wanted to be a, you know.
Well, so, tell me what Henry taught you. What was so special about Henry?
Well, Henry was about kind of freeing you from any kind of formulaic approach to color perception, you know. And the artist uses color to create the illusion of light in painting. Okay, so it was really about using color to describe light, but not only light, but an object or a human being or a tree in a given light environment. And so what he would use the term light key to define that. And if you look historically, as you read old books on painting and so forth, that was a term in common usage, I would say, light key.
For sure.
And you know, just to determine is it low key, is it deep and sonorous, you know, like in a moody indoor still life, you know, or is it high key, what you would find on a bright sunny day, mid morning, you know. And but the intriguing thing about Henschy's approach is it freed you up to your, you know, he basically handed the authority back to you in that he trained you to perceive the color yourself. So rather than say, mix two parts of red with one part of blue and you stir that together and you've got your magic purple and that's going to be your shadow note on a bright sunny day. It's like, well, yeah, okay, it might be some kind of, you know, you take a shadow note of a man posing for a portrait in bright sunlight. Sure, it might be some kind of blue. First, you might notice that it's blue. Well, if you put blue up there, and you go, you know what, maybe it's a little warmer than blue. So you put a little red in there, you know, so it's because of violet. But that then you got a problem. What kind of red are you going to put in there? You're going to put a cadmium red in there or a quinacridone rose to make it, you know, so you can shift the brilliance of the violet, you know. So, well, you know what? It isn't really that purple, you know, because maybe there's a vase sitting on the table and with got a flower. There's a purple over there. Well, it can't be that. So then you end up mixing across the color. I call it mixing across the color wheel. So you might interject a little bit of yellow to kind of take that dramatic, you know, saccharine or saturated violetness, you know, tune it down a notch. So a little bit of, let's say you put a little bit of yellow in there. And keep in mind, every yellow is going to have a different property. Lemon yellow is going to look different than a right, or yellow ochre. You know, so how do you master this orchestration of these colors? You know, there's, and you say there's no royal road. It's you've just got to get out there and paint. And you do, and at the Cape School, we did color studies. And, you know, he called them color studies as distinct from paintings. And I think it put the attention on the fact that we were really analyzing the color and how it would communicate the light effect. And so, well, let's go. You asked me what I learned from Henschy.
Yes.
Henschy, okay. So can I take it back one step further
to absolutely.
Charles Hawthorne? Because Charles Hawthorne would, this particular approach to, I'm going to call it this Henschy study method, okay. This particular approach to painting started with Charles Hawthorne, and he was a great figurative painter, pretty well known in the history of American art.
Yeah, I knew who he was.
And he founded the Cape Cod, Provincetown art community. Charles Hawthorne was William Merritt Chase's teaching assistant at the Shinnecock Long Island Outdoor Painting School. And that's often recognized as one of the very first outdoor painting schools, like a summer art colony at Shinnecock, Long Island. And Charles Hawthorne was William Merritt Chase's teaching assistant. So in 1899... Charles Hawthorne founded the Cape School of Art in Provincetown, Massachusetts, and kind of took those lessons of painting outdoors to the Cape. And he came up with this method of studying color, where they would take the local Portuguese kids and pose them on barrels seated with their back to the sun in the little town harbor area. So what happened was you'd have these kids posed with their back to the sun, so they became this kind of darkened silhouette, let's say, in the shadow. And he would have excuse me, he would have his students paint with putty knives so that they couldn't draw the thing with little wiry brushes. They had to use these broad, dramatic strokes of color to register the shadow of their face against the blaze of light on the beach and on the water. And these studies came to be called mudheads because of the resulting depth of tone of the shadow note, because kind of a muddy color, the flesh in the deep shadow. So it's kind of like silhouette painting. And if you think about Claude Monet's paintings of the haystacks, where he really first started to register the dramatic, you know, those were more or less like silhouettes. Yeah. Seen against the light. So you had this strong shadow note registered against the light plane. And those two dramatic plays of patterns of the shadow area next to the light creates the illusion of sunlight. Okay, so he had his students paint with putty knives so they couldn't draw these little fussy outlines. He had to use these broad dramatic shapes of color. Hawthorne, do you need a cushion?
No, because
that chair can be kind of uncomfortable.
No, I'm all good.
You can edit out me taking a sip.
I can edit all you know. You know very well. Like, this is a good
sound
edit.
Like I know what I'm talking about.
A little bit.
I'm closing my eyes and we have a Sorolla on the wall here. So
that's nice.
The same kind of thing. Here's these Sorolla. So you see the. It's funny because upstairs I went down to my studio and got some paintings like those mud heads to kind of show. I figured I would have them there while I talking, but now we have a Sorolla, who was a great Spanish impressionist who Henschief referred to a lot. But you see it's the color of the light in relation to the shadow. Here you have the light plane on the hat in relation to the shadow. That creates the illusion of the sunlight effect. So
the mud head I think is an unfortunate term, because when I look at those mud heads, I don't see mud. I see a brilliance of depth of light
inside
those shadows.
Oh, yes, that's right. And I think with excuse me, Henschief, just like Hawthorne was William Merritt Chase's teaching assistant, Henschief was Charles Hawthorne's teaching assistant in the 1920s. Henschief was about the same age as the century. He was like 1 year older than the year of the century. So when he was, when he was in his mid-20s, he had begun to be the daily teacher at the Cape School. Hawthorne would come in at the end of the week. He didn't usually make the rounds on the beach while the students were painting. He would come in at the end of the week, and they would put all the studies on a big screen, and he would go over and instruct. And there's a wonderful book called Hawthorne on Painting. And if you read that book, it really gives you a good idea of the kind of aphorisms and the commentary that he would say about the paintings. And to this day, that when I read that book, man, it takes me right back to the Cape School, because Henschief really adored Hawthorne, and he became somewhat like a father figure to Henschief. And I remember Henschief saying that, Hawthorne later in his life said, Henry, I really think we've got something here. And he used the word we, and he said it was like music to his soul that Hawthorne referred to him. And, like he really...
Incredible.
Yeah, it was really something to him. And when I was studying with Henschief, when Henschief was in his 80s, he was still quoting Hawthorne. Kind of like I'm always still quoting in my class, I'm always quoting Henschief. I guess it's kind of natural to an artist. It has that dramatic impact on your work. But the cool thing about Henschief is that he really, I think he took the element, the study, because Hawthorne was essentially a figurative painting, and a figurative painter, and a very fine one. You know, you would paint the townspeople, and they kind of captured the spirit of that early American fishing village, and that's what his work is known for, not really as much of a high colorist, although there are some beautiful demos, outdoor demos that he did of models on the pier that are in the town hall collection. But Henschief really took it and much further, I think, than Hawthorne would have dreamed of. And so he started painting with a smaller knife, whereas Hawthorne would teach with a putty knife, a pretty, like a 2-inch wide putty knife to, you know, to have his students apply the color. Henschy started having his students paint with smaller palette knives, so still somewhat cumbersome in that they were studying large areas of color, but they had a greater control. And his own artistry, Henschy's artistry, developed along the lines of the years and the century. Like, if you follow Henschy's development, it's extraordinary to see him come out from under the wing of Hawthorne, you know, and his paintings were a little more traditionally oriented, I would say. And then as he never stopped studying color, you know. So you can see a really beautiful flowering of awareness of color throughout the century. And he used to tell us, when I was his student in the 80s, he said, if I had followed every ism that had come down the pike, he said, what would I have to show for it? And if you think about it, there was a lot of pressure in that era, you know, to like bend and to yield to the currents of modernism, and like he said, every ism that came down the pike. And there's many representational painters that kind of veered off of what they were doing to fall in line with what was in vogue. But Henschy, you know, really maintained his track of studying color, and it really bore fruit, because by the time the 60s and the 70s, he was doing extraordinarily beautiful paintings. And I'm talking about from the standpoint of color. You know, if you look at his best work from the 60s and the 70s, because it took that long for it to really bear fruition. You know, in other words, that lifetime of study granted him just the most, you know, sumptuously beautiful paintings in their orchestration of light and color. He was also a very gifted draftsman, but I'm talking particularly about that aspect of his paintings, you know, relative to color, such that you wouldn't believe that a painter could perfect the art of painting in color to that degree. Because a lot of times with the history of painting, you know, you get to a point in the analysis of realistic painting, you go, oh yeah, well we've been there, we've done that. That's kind of what the modernists said, right? Oh, we've conquered realism. It's done. It's a closed book. We figured it out. Now we've got new vistas, right?
to go explore.
Yeah, but Henschy didn't see it that way. Mm. Henschy didn't see it that way. He went, no, we're still on the... You know, I remember him giving a talk at Maryland Hall, and he was doing a demo. Right before the demo, he would talk a bit. You know, this was in 1984. And he said, you know, when I think about the history of painting, I don't view myself as one of the contemporary. I don't view myself as fitting in to the painters that paint now. I view myself as fitting into the painters that paint, and in my, you know, I was in my 20s, and I could have sworn that the next word that came was going to come out of his mouth was, I consider myself to be amongst the painters of the past. But it wasn't. He said, I consider myself to be amongst the painters of the future. It blew my mind, because he envisioned that, you know, there was going to be this trajectory of people still studying color that was going to get even better. You know, that here he was, somebody that took the art of color, you know, to a higher level maybe than it had been done, but he envisioned it going even further, and it was like, oh my gosh, I was like, it just blew my mind. I was like, wow, you know.
In our next episode, I'll again be with John Ebersberger as John describes his own career and gives advice for young artists to succeed in getting a solid art education. In the midst of this winter cold snap, I spent some time in LA in the past few weeks on business. I met up with my old friend and Disney animator, Michael Suri, who's now working in story at DreamWorks. And Mike and I talked about his career over breakfast. And that's coming in 2 weeks. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You will find show notes for this episode and more information about Schaefer Creative at schaefercreative.studio. Music is by Lee Rosevere.